Hey, I'm Michael Dorinda.
And I'm Jake Bennett.
And welcome to episode 48 of the North Meet South web podcast.
Hello, friends. Thank you for joining us for another wonderful episode of the North Meet South podcast. Very much appreciate taking a little bit of time out of your very busy week to visit with us and catch up on what's going on in our lives and in the worlds of technology that we're living in currently. As you may be able to tell from my very odd introduction, I'm still waking up. I just woke up a couple minutes ago here, and it's about 11 o'clock, and I'm having a couple handfuls of cereal, trying to get myself awake.
yep.
So we can get started on this bad boy. So, yeah. It was one of those things, I woke up, oh, crap.
Hey, at least you woke up. You could have slept all the way through.
I know. It wouldn't be surprising either. That would actually probably be the more typical response. So
certainly wouldn't be the first
time. I'm awake. It would not. It would certainly not. So what's going on with you, my friend?
Well, I have, for those of you that follow me on Twitter, I have damaged my only remaining good knee.
Oh, no.
I went and saw the doctor on Friday, and he has described it as a possible acute medial meniscal tear, which basically means the meniscus is good. Like the cartilage or the springy stuff between the joints of the knee, which is supposed to act as a shock absorber, but an acute injury means that under stress or under pressure and in my case, turning, like twisting and jumping while playing basketball, the shock absorber gave way and tore. And I've been on crutches this week. I had to spend a couple of days working from home because it was easier than, I mean, I could drive. I don't have a manual or a stick shift, as you Americans call it. So I was able to drive, but it was just easier to work from home, which was nice because I got a bit done. I got to spend a bit more time with Eli, which was nice. You know, gave Rhea a bit of a break as well in terms of I could pick him up when he started crying so that she could get his bottle ready or whatever else that needed to be done. So I had a small taste of that remote life for the 2 days that I was working from home, which was nice. But sadly, this brings an end to my not so stellar basketball career.
Oh man,
I'm out of good knees. Yeah, as I said, I'm out of good knees. So when I injured my right knee back in 2011, I said to Ree, if I was to injure my knee again, or if I was to have any other sort of serious injury, and like this is not what you would call a serious injury. That's like it's not a broken leg or anything like that. But in terms of social sport, I said I promised that I would stop. And I'm quite disappointed because I really do enjoy playing.
Yeah, I know you play quite a bit every week.
Yeah, it's not worth it anymore, especially with Eli. I want to be able to move around and chase after him as he grows up.
Right.
You know, putting my health and my family first in this instance. So it's kept me out of the gym this week as well, which has been a bit annoying. You'd think, you know, I can still work on upper body, but I don't think it would look quite right if I was on crutches, like moving from machine to machine in the gym and bench to bench and, you know, hobbling around in there. So
you just need to like strap some like ankle weights to the crutches themselves and just walk around with your crutches.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, I had to take a few days off from that. So I'm hoping to get back in the gym tomorrow, just to keep the upper body stuff going. As anyone who's injured themselves would probably attest, you get a bit down on yourself. And so my diet kind of went out the window this week as well. So I was eating potato chips and having, you know, some takeout and whatever. And
sympathy, you know, sympathy food, right? You're just going to feel bad for yourself a little bit, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, I felt awful most of all for, you know, Ree, because it meant that I can't really... Well, you know, we thought from a safety perspective, in case my knee buckles or whatever, that I should probably not walk around with Eli or anything like that. So we've both been up, you know, with him and that at the same time. So luckily for us, though, he's starting to sleep quite a bit longer. He goes to bed at 9 o'clock and kind of sleeps for 5-6 hours at a time now. And then he'll only wake up once for a feed and a settle. And then I got out of the house, you know, 7 o'clock, 7:30, without much fuss, the 2 days at the end of the week that I was back in the office. So it's kind of exciting. He's not sleeping as much during the day now.
Yeah.
But yeah, like 6 hours in one go is great.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I'd say that's, you know, that's like reality for us right now. Yeah. So, I mean...
Well, I mean, I think the spec or whatever it is, I don't know what you call it, but 5 hours is what they consider to be sleeping through. So, you know, nice. If he's doing 9 to 3 is pretty good. And then he gets up for 15 minutes just for a little top up and then sleeps for another 2.5 hours or so, which is nice. He slept on Re yesterday afternoon on the couch for 3 hours and she couldn't wake him. Like she was tickling his back and playing with his feet and he would be like, like grumble at her and then just go straight back to sleep. So
that's hilarious.
But yeah, he's doing really well, which is good. And yeah, being able to sleep, it was actually good. I mean, as much as good timing for an injury is, it was pretty good timing because he was actually kind of, you know, really easy on us with it. So that was nice.
Yeah, that is. It would have been miserable to have a really bad, you know, to be on crutches and then have a horrible sleeping week. That'd be no fun. Hey, I was going to ask you when the press conference is scheduled for then, for your announcement.
For the official retirement announcement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, most of my teammates have been all, you know, I know we've got, because it's a public holiday tomorrow. So I've got no game. And they say, you know, you can have a week off and then we'll see you back out the week after. No. This is
no,
it.
Like, I'm done, guys.
They don't think I'm being serious. I'm like, I'm done. That's it. Which is nice because I'll get, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays back to do other things. You know, hang out with Eli and...
Chess club.
Put in a bit of time. Yeah, chess club. I mean, re-joke that I should take up lawn bowls, but the radiologist at the emergency room on Monday night suggested that, you know, even that's probably a little bit dangerous. You might turn the wrong way. Those bowls get a bit heavy, so... You know, it was good. So
sucks,
I've got an MRI
old,
scheduled.
Sucks yeah, getting old. No
I've
fun.
Got an MRI scheduled for Wednesday. So hopefully there's nothing too bad. I was doing some reading about it and depending on where it is, there's like the outer section of the meniscus, which still got blood in it. So it generally heals by itself. But where the doctor suspects my injury is on the inside where there is no blood flow. So what they do is they try and stitch it back together with a like arthroscopic surgery. And, you know, because they don't want to cut out whatever's torn because that can increase your risk of osteoarthritis in older age. So fingers crossed they can stitch it back together like they did my other knee.
Yeah,
so.
Man, no joke. Jeez. Sorry to hear that, bro. That sucks. I remember getting the picture and being like, oh no, what in the world? It sounds like I was hoping like, oh, maybe it's just like a sprain or something, but looked like you weren't so lucky. So
yeah, I mean, I just can't bear weight on it. But,
sure.
You know, it is what it is.
All right. Well, let's see. I wanted to say this real quick. So we cut down a tree today. That was kind of fun. Got to cut down a tree.
Cut down a tree in your own yard.
In my own yard. Yep. So
and you made sure it fell away from the house.
I did not,
or at least onto your neighbor's house.
The guy
house,
who I brought over to help me with it did. Who happened to be my very own boss, Jordan Brill. Do you remember Jordan from Larry Pine? You remember Jordan?
I do. Yeah, yeah.
He's Mr. like jack of all trades. You know that dude. He's done pretty much everything once or for a while, and so you know.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, you got a chainsaw? Yeah, I got a chainsaw. Hey, you ever cut down a tree before? Oh, yeah, I cut down trees all day. Really? Okay. All right. Yeah. So he came over and we hooked up like a tow strap because it was like going to fall on like my neighbor's house, right? You know? And so,
yeah.
And so
you
we
don't
just
want that.
Yeah, exactly. So we just hooked it up and he just like, honestly, we had this tree cut down and dragged to the curb, I think in like 45 minutes. It was insane.
Nice.
Yeah. He's
so it wasn't a very big tree?
No, it wasn't that big. No, it wasn't that big. It was dying. Yeah, okay. It was an old, nasty tree. So it was dying.
Yeah, yeah,
and so,
yeah.
Anyway, that was kind of fun today. But
nice.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's funny those things. Like my dad, he loves to buy himself a piece of power equipment. Like if he has to do anything once, then he had to chop down a tree once. So he's got a chainsaw. And then he got
chainsaw.
One of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got one of those telescopic ones. And then he
those
you
nice.
Know, he cut the tree down. So then he had to mulch it. So then he went and bought himself one of those like tree mulches.
Oh, yeah.
He's just got all this equipment.
I have a friend who's like that too. He always says to his wife, like, we can either hire it done or I get to buy the tools to do it right the first time. Like, I'm not going to do it without the tools kind of thing. So anyway, he ends up with a ton of tools too. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I've got a couple things that I kind of have on the docket that I could talk about this week. And then, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what your timeline looks like for today, like what, how you are on time. Everybody's sleeping here, so it doesn't really matter for me, but.
Yeah. I'll just try and keep it reasonably tight.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. So I thought there was a couple things. We have the PHP drama that you were a part of, which we can talk about. That you started. We have finite state machines, which I know we've talked about before, but I just read a really, like, I'm actually still in the middle of reading this slide deck, and it's really, really good. Talking about finite state machines in Vue and React. And then the other one I wanted to talk about, since Spasi is a sponsor for us, actually, is BladeX. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to take a look at that.
I did see the tweets going on about that.
That looks really interesting. Yeah, yeah. So I figured we might be able to talk about those sort of three things. You want to add anything to the mix?
No, I think you'll get me in enough trouble with the PHP drama. And
cool.
And then we can steer away from that as quickly as possible.
Let's start with the PHP drama then. So let's talk about this. So since it's kind of your deal here, why don't you introduce this one? So I think, is it Dries? How do you say his name? Vince?
I think it's pronounced Dries, yeah.
Dries Vince, yeah. He kind of started out replying to Adam, I think, on a thread here. But anyway, yeah, introduce us to the issue and what's going on.
Yeah, so there was an RFC that was more or less unanimously approved for PHP. So PHP has a request for comment process in order to get new features added to the language. And the latest one that came through and that has been approved in a 71-1 vote was for typed properties, I think it was. Let me double check on that.
I think that's right.
I've gotten so upset about it. Yeah, typed properties was accepted pending implementation. So it'll probably go into PHP 7.4. And this is basically building on the introduction of scalar types and return types in PHP 7. And a lot of it, look, don't get me wrong, the internals team does and has done a lot of great things for PHP as a language. Let me start with that. You know, we've seen the improvement in speed in new features coming into the language, and for that, you know, I'm grateful because it's kept me from running off to other languages in the past. And what the type properties is allowing you to do is to basically specify the scalar type. So where you would have like a previously where you might have had a private $ID and then you would set those values either via a public method or via a constructor, and then you would restrict access to those properties because they're private. So you wouldn't be able to listen or to call the name variable on a user object, for example, without using the getName method. Yeah. So with the type properties, it allows you to type them as public, and then, you know, it gives you the ability to access those properties without having to worry about all of this boilerplate to make sure that, like, you set an ID as an integer value.
Right.
Right?
Right. So, yeah. Yep. You explained that perfectly. Yep.
So, but this gives you the ability to support more runtime enforced annotations for properties. For example, you could specify scalar types. You could specify that they're classes or that they're nullable, you know, properties, that they're it works on statics as well and all that kind of stuff. People say that, you know, PHP is introducing those features and that they're all optional. Like, you don't have to use typing if you don't want to. The problem with that is that all of the upstream packages are where these things are going to, in my opinion, this is where they'll start to set in. You know, something like a Symfony component would introduce it. And if you wanted to extend it, you'd have to use that in your own code. You know, PHP Unit would probably be another really popular one that'll adopt it and already has started adopting it. And it's kind of, you know, we've heard this argument about sharp knives and, you know, letting people play with the knives and learning, you know, if they cut themselves, they cut themselves. There's all this like hand waving about, oh, you know, type safety and how do I know that someone's going to pass an integer into my ID field? Well, I mean, we've survived long enough without it. PHP is kind of changing from, you know, real dynamic language that you could do lots of crazy things with. You know, we've maintained backwards compatibility for so long because of things like WordPress and so on, that it's a very delicate balance. And like WordPress will probably stay around and maybe it just won't ever support newer versions of PHP, or it'll be a long time before it does. I've said in the past that I don't really see the value of this stuff, because in a language like PHP, where everything is interpreted at runtime, it doesn't really give you that much safety, because you still have to run the code in order for it to blow up, and it can still blow up in production. Whereas if you're compiling it, then in a compiled language, the code would never even compile. And then people go into, you know, the arguments like static analysis. It makes it easier to run static analysis tools over your code. It makes things easier for your IDE. So, I mean, and the fun argument that I had this week as well was, you know, how do I know if I can pass an integer into the find method of a model? I'm like, or of a class. I'm like, well, it doesn't matter, because PHP was just going to make it an integer anyway. And he goes, oh, but, you know, giving it a type hint removes all of that. You know, you don't have to put all those checks in there to make sure that they did pass an integer in, and all the kind of like weird stuff that doesn't really apply to PHP. Like, I totally get it in something like Java, which is a strongly typed language, or if you're doing it in C or C++ or whatever, you know, what are the languages that are strongly typed, that they're compiled, that these things would actually get picked up earlier on? Whereas I and a few others, I guess, in the community probably lean more towards having tests and making sure that your tests validate these use cases, because there's nothing that says that just because you passed an integer into the find method, it's going to return, you know, that it's actually going to find something based on that ID, you know? So, sure.
Yeah. Right. Do you think anybody's advocating, right? I mean, and this is a contrived example, right? What you're talking about with the integer and stuff, but like, I don't know that anybody on the other side is really advocating like lack of tests or less tests, right? And for me, honestly, like I feel like I really want to be on this side of the ball where you guys are at, where it's like, you know, like dynamic language and all that stuff. And it is, and that's great and that's fine. But I just like, I feel like I'm having a hard time really making an argument for like why it's bad. And like, I get what you're saying. Like, it's optional / not optional once things start coming in. So like, let's just talk about PHP unit for a second, right? So let's say they type hint something. Well, so then what? So like, you know, so they use that. So what you're saying, like if I want to extend something, then I have to use what, like a PHP unit contract instead of just passing in a plain class or something that I might construct or build up?
I mean, it's not good versus bad. It's just you're shifting where you might get your errors in the context of PHP, because you still have to run the code in the interpreter. So you still have to run it in the browser or on the command line or whatever,
right,
in order for these errors to come up. And I guess that's, you know, it doesn't make sense to me in a dynamic language.
Got it.
You know, it's not,
because you're saying if you don't have a test to hit it anyway, there's no way you're going to know that it's going to blow up in production unless you have a test covering it anyway. And what you're saying is, if you have a test covering it anyway, why do you need the type hint? Right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, okay, that makes sense. Let me say it one more time out loud for myself, because I just need to hear it. Like, okay, so essentially you're saying it's a dynamic language. It's not compiled. So what's going to actually cause an error is going to be when that language or when that piece of code there is run. If your test never runs it, even if you have a type, it's never going to blow up in your tests. So you're not going to know until it's in production anyway, right?
Yeah.
And so the argument then is, if you have to have a test to do it anyway, why don't you just trust the test instead of trusting a typing system in PHP? It's unnecessary. That's what you're saying. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And like, people will use it. And I look, in my packages, I use types and I put doc blocks in because other people are using the code. Right. But in my own applications and in things that we use internally, then, you know, I don't necessarily, because everyone is already across that code base. But anything that I'm sharing, then I make it as, you know, as I guess progressive as possible in terms of adding these features in, because, you know, people ask for the doc blocks and it makes it easy to discover. So I'm not saying I will refuse to use them. I don't think they provide as much value as what people tend to suggest that they will in the context of PHP.
Sure. Okay. So let's talk about kind of like, The first argument now makes sense to me about that. The second one that I kind of saw, which was interesting, was basically saying, if you change the type hint on anything, it's essentially a breaking change, right? So it really makes your code, I suppose, possibly much more brittle in that sense, right? If you need to change, if you need to change something as simple as a type hint, it can cause all sorts of problems. And so it really makes your code less flexible to future changes, yeah. I suppose, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, at that point, you would probably do it as a breaking change, as in a major release.
Sure.
Because, I mean, I'm sure all of the people that are using these, you know, stricter constructs in their language would probably be adhering to some kind of semantic versioning scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It would be interesting to see in the longer term how this affects like Laravel itself, because it does lean a lot on reflection in yes, PHP and correct, being able right. to look into what was passed into a function and doing things based on that. And I wonder, I mean, I'm not in a position to comment specifically, but I wonder if that will impact the flexibility that reflection gives us, particularly if like some of the Laravel components that extend directly from Symfony, if that's going to make things less trivial to implement in the Laravel level, because Symfony may introduce some type hints. So as I said, I don't know what the impact of that would be. It might be nothing, but certainly the reflection capabilities that Laravel uses quite extensively may be impacted. So it'd be interesting to see how things go, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. And I think, so it sounds too like if this was truly optional, like if it was truly like take it or leave it, guys, don't worry about it, no big deal, like do what you want with it, then it'd be more like, okay, well, I mean, it's just an optional feature. But your fear is that as this gets implemented, it's going to become more and more a necessity based on the fact that we're using so many pieces from other libraries and frameworks and whatever, that it's no longer going to become an optional piece just because the, you know, the vote itself being, what was it, 71 to 72?
71 to 1.
71. Oh, yeah. Sorry. 71 to 1.
Yeah.
Basically advocating for this as the, you know, as needing to be a part of PHP. So I guess that's what you're really saying is like, I fear for the future of PHP and what this means more than like, well, it's an optional piece and there you go. No problem. It's more like, because this is now in there, I feel like this is going to affect those of us who don't want to use them in the future. It's going to become a necessity.
Yeah.
Got it.
Cause you sure. know, Symfony 4 might not affect, but Symfony, whatever their version, I think they're on version 3 now. So say Symfony 4, maybe it doesn't affect it too much, but Symfony 5, they may start doing it. Does that mean that, you know, if I don't want to use those features, that I'm stuck on Symfony 4 indefinitely, and eventually Symfony 4 is not going to be supported anymore? It won't get security updates and things like that. So look, I'm sure over time my mind will change and I'll just start using them anyway. But for now, like, and it's not even fear. I think it's just seeing something and going, there are other things that we could have that we don't have.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, improved syntax of things, as opposed to sweeping changes to, you know, the underlying language itself.
Sure.
So, you know, as I said at the start of this piece, there's been a lot of improvements to the language. We've made it faster. We've made it more stable. We've improved the development cycle of it and the release cycle and things like that. These are all great things that are, you know, they're improving the language, but they're not changing it. Whereas this feels to me like an actual change to the language.
Okay.
So yep.
Fair enough.
But and Amanda Folsen raised a good point in that PHP used to be a templating language, and now we have templating frameworks
packages
and tools on top of PHP.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was bound to happen eventually. Yeah. As I said, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
It just feels like maybe, I know that like David Hemphill, Adam Wethen, I don't know if Taylor specifically has weighed in on this, but those guys are both really more on like the side of things that would say, no, let's keep it a dynamic language, get rid of these types and this strictness. And I think kind of if you have Ruby on one end and you have Java on the other end, it would seem like PHP is trending more towards that Java sort of side of things and less towards yeah. the Ruby side of things, right? Which is, I think, what's yeah. worrisome or bothersome to some of these people who are on the side of the fence
yeah,
that would
I think
say
that's,
they
that's,
don't
that's
really.
That's probably the long and short of it, yeah.
Sure, sure. Okay, that makes sense, yeah. Like I said, I've kind of like, don't, I have a dog in this fight, certainly, because I use PHP every day, but I'm just kind of waiting to see how things shake out. We'll see.
Yeah.
There's that.
All right, let's move on before I get in any more trouble.
Let's do it. All right, so let's talk about Blade X real quick. So Spacy has released this new package called Laravel Blade X. And what this does is it provides an easy way to render custom HTML components in your blade views. So one of the really nice things that, you know, React and Vue give you is the ability to create a little component and then be able to embed that in your app using a tag similar to like how you would with an H1, right? You just have like, so in HTML, you just type H1, and then in the, you know, in between the tags, you type my title or whatever, and then it renders out specifically based on like that tag. We have these custom HTML components that we will oftentimes have like registration form, or maybe more generically location picker, right? Which is like wrapping up Algolia API interaction and how you want to display that to a user with a dropdown and all that stuff, right? So that gives you, Vue and React give you the ability to do those things. Well, so what this does is allows you to do similar sort of things with Blade. Previously, what we've had in Blade is components where we can either include a Blade view and then pass in to that Blade view some variables that we want to set. And then inside that Blade view, then we can utilize or grab those variables and utilize them inside that view. And so what this does is it kind of puts some syntactic sugar, if you will, on top of that layer so that you can embed these things similar to how you would if you're using Vue or React. So you can say my alert, and then you can pass in a couple parameters into that tag, and then it essentially will do the work of passing those variables into a specified Blade template for you. So really just, it feels a little bit nicer and feels a little bit more like it would if you were using a JavaScript sort of component based thing, but allows you to just stay straight in Blade. So that's pretty cool. If that makes sense. Did I do a good job explaining that? Did I miss anything?
Yeah, no, I think you did pretty well. Ultimately, what happens is this will take your HTML attribute syntax and it will convert it into a native Blade at component and pass all of your variables and parameters into that. So you don't even have to worry about this Blade X functionality conflicting with your Vue components, which do the same kind of thing, right? So that does it at runtime in the browser, whereas this will do it server side, and it'll give you the potential to obviously cache those views as well.
Yeah. So like one of the things that I was looking at this and I was like, okay, that's really interesting. And it is, it's a pretty cool win on top of the Blade layer that we already love and enjoy. Obviously, some of the things that the JavaScript portion of this usually provide for you, the two things that I really like, right, is number one, like the styling that goes along with the component is embedded directly in the component file itself, right? So like we don't really have that with this, of course. I mean, this isn't meant to do that, but something that I was like, that would be nice if you were able to do that. And the other thing that I thought would be interesting too is, and with a component, obviously, is you have a lot of the logic kind of bound up inside the component itself, obviously inside the script portion of a Vue single file template. And this is kind of devoid of that, right? You don't have any information or any structure around how you're retrieving the data that needs to populate this component in the case that you needed to do that. You still have to have a controller passing the data that you might need to render these specific things. So that may be, just depending on how you kind of structure your Blade views and stuff like that, it might not be a problem. It might not be a problem at all. But
yeah,
those are just two kind of things that I was like, that would be interesting if you could do that somehow. So one of the things that actually we've talked about previously on Laravel News before is this idea of, what do they call it? Vue composers, but he didn't call them that. What did he call them?
Vue models.
Vue model. Yeah, no, not that. No. It was basically the idea of, instead of using a Vue composer, which, you know, you bind in your app service provider, and when a Vue gets rendered, then it goes and fetches the data from wherever in your application. The problem with those being that it's really hard to figure out where that data is coming from, because it's not immediately obvious that you have a Vue composer being used. Mm-hmm. I think he called,
called them Vue components.
Yeah, he called them Vue components. That's what he called them, right?
Yeah.
And so essentially what he did is he had a class that extended the HTMLable trait or implemented the trait and then rendered itself onto the page and then did all the providing of the data from inside there. So I was thinking, if you had some sort of like marriage between this Blade X idea and these Vue components that was kind of thrown around by, and who was it that did that?
Was it the Vue components?
Yeah.
It was, I think it was maybe Alex. Hanks?
No.
What was it? Sebastian.
I don't think it was. I think it was Jeff Ocha.
Oh, he wrote the original blog post. Yeah. And then Sparsi took that and made a package for it. Yeah.
So anyway, that was the idea behind that, though, is this the idea that you could provide all the data for it. Anyway, just some thoughts there kind of around how you could even improve it a little bit more, or depending on kind of your frame of reference, kind of where you're coming from when you're looking at this. So like when I'm looking at this, my immediate thought is like, ooh, how could I make it so that I could do this sort of server-side rendered sort of stuff without having to introduce Vue.js for maybe some of my more simple ones, where I'm just kind of hoping to package up some of the HTML and some of the data, or some of the behavior around how I want to retrieve those pieces of information that's going to be rendered in there. So anyway, just a thought, but in any case, I think this is pretty cool. So it's still in development. It's you have this big warning right at the top of the page, says do not use in production yet, but it looks pretty interesting and I think it'll be pretty cool to use moving forward.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if this gets to the point where it actually becomes a first party, you know, if it gets pulled into the framework or not.
I think it might.
Yeah, it seems to, it would be interesting.
It really doesn't offer anything else. It doesn't offer anything new, right? It's not like a new concept. It's just a new syntax that feels...
A new syntax for the component stuff.
Yeah, and feels really nice. It really feels nice. So I like it. I think it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting kind of as time marches on here and we have other contributors kind of pushing into this project, what it could eventually become.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Finite state machines. So we've talked a little bit about finite state machines before. Essentially, the problem with like, okay, so for example, like if you're fetching something and then, okay, so let's say, let me just think about this for a second here. I'm trying to think of a good example. Let's say I need to go out to the server and I need to get a list of users that I can select from in a dropdown. So I have a team and I want to select here are the users that I want to be included in this meeting that I'm setting up. So I need to go out to the server, I need to get the users, and then once I get those users, I need to be able to search through that list or whatever, right? But the first thing I need to be able to do is like select which team I need the users from. So here it is. We have an idle state where like I don't know what team it is yet, and then I'm going to click something. It's going to allow me to select my team. I'm then going to go out and grab the users from that team, return those, and then I need to be able to select from a new dropdown one of the team members, right? So like you can already hear like in that there's quite a few different stages of state. The difficulty with that is there's a lot of paths that could be forked off of each one of those interactions. So if, for example, the very first thing that I'm doing, clicking and selecting the team, if when I go out, it fails to find that team, I now have an error path that I need to handle. And then I need to be able to figure out how to get from that error path back to a spot where they can then select a different team, or how do I recover from that error? I also have a path of, okay, now I succeed. And now I have the members of a particular team. And then once I fetch those members of that particular team, I need to then be able to select one of those. And when I select that and press submit, I need to either be able to get it to the server or I need to handle the error path. And so you end up having, you know, what we do a lot of times is we'll have these kind of Booleans in our state that says like, is submitting false? Is completed true? Is error false? Right? And then we kind of set these flags as we go along in our state to kind of control that flow. But it can get really confusing, really, really confusing, right? So what these state machines do is essentially allow you to define up front, here are the different states that it may be in. So it may be in idle, it may be in loading, maybe in error, or maybe in like success. And then allows you to define the actions that exist between each one of those states and allows you to be able to map them really easily. And what it does is it really gives like a common language between the developers and the designers. So you can say, here are the states you need to account for in the UI, and developers, here are the states you need to account for in the actual code portion of it, right? Which I found really, really helpful. So I've been recently working in a couple different situations where there's a lot of different forking paths of state, and it gets really difficult to maintain really quickly. A really simple example of this is when you have like a multi-page form that you're doing in something like Vue, right? So if there's ever a situation where you say like, okay, based on the selection of this user, I need to show them conditional fields that they need to fill out. You know what I'm saying? So like if they select this particular track, then they need to fill out these fields over here. But if they select a different track, then they need to fill out these other fields over here. And kind of navigating back and forth between those gets really, really messy. So this, we'll put this in the show notes. It's just kind of talking about finite state machines in general. David Khurshid, I can't remember. I don't know if that's how to pronounce his name or not. But he's got a really good article basically on why these are a great idea, and then provides a NPM package that allows you to essentially define a finite state machine and explains how you can get through the different states and how you perform actions and really just a lot of the logic around it. So I'm still, like I said, I'm still working through it. I don't actually have I don't actually have a complete working understanding of it, but as I'm looking through this, it makes so much sense. And just seems like it solves a lot of problems that we all deal with whenever we're trying to handle these different states.
Yeah, it should be good. And anything that obviously shortcuts the process so that you don't have to reinvent the actual defining of, you know, how you handle the states, but just say like this state can transition to this state and this state and so on, makes things a lot easier. Anytime that you can find something that'll shortcut that process for you makes life so much easier.
Yeah, and even just to have a way to map it, right? So like how do I visually map this, and what are the strategies I can use to very clearly define what these different states are and how I get from one to the other? Mm-hmm. And so, because a lot of times what ends up happening is you just kind of start going, and then you get to a point where you realize, okay, like I've got a conditional kind of state here, right? Okay, so I need to handle that, and then you kind of get down that track a little bit further, and you come up with some custom solution for how you're going to do that. You add a couple of Boolean flags and no big deal. And then you realize, if they need to go backwards because they messed up on a previous step, okay, how do I get back to this? So now you're doing even more kind of crazy stuff. And so just to kind of have a defined path that says, no, don't try and reinvent the wheel here. We have a solution to how this needs to work. Here it is. This is how you do this in a sane way. And then gives you the tools that are tried and true and been used by lots of people in the past to basically say, do this way. This is what makes sense, you know?
Yep.
So pretty awesome. We'll put the slides in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put the link in there so people can have a look.
Maybe we need to have this dude on to talk about this. That would actually be really good. That's why we have a podcast, right? We can have people on to talk that's about right. stuff.
That's right. Explain not ourselves. Interpret their stuff. That's, yeah, exactly. We just invite them on and get them to explain it for us.
Exactly. So let's do that. I'm gonna reach out to this guy, see if he can come onto the show and talk to us a little about finite state machines. That'd be pretty cool. You know, some people, like, you go read through their slides, and it's like you feel like you have to be watching the talk in order to get anything from it, because they're just either too spaced out or whatever. This dude's slides are actually like funny and super informative. So like you get the punchlines of his jokes and stuff, and like it's hit for hit. Like it seems like you read through these slides and they're really, really well done. So it's a good slide deck. Anyway, go ahead. What were you going to say though?
Yeah, nice. Well, hopefully we can have him on the show next time.
Absolutely.
I was just going to finish up with two things.
Let's do it.
Number one, I did the last of the applications that I used was updated to support macOS Mojave.
Yes.
So I did that yesterday, and I am, as you wouldn't believe it, because all of my editor and all of that, I use light themes, but I'm rocking the dark mode in Mojave, and it looks pretty nice. It's pleasing to the eyes. So far so good. Hasn't done anything weird. Nothing's, I mean, it's been less than 24 hours and I haven't really been using it that much, but the recording has gone well so far. So
I heard that good. It wreaks some havoc with Docker, but
yeah, I just saw something come up on Twitter that said that there's some issues with Docker for Mac in Mojave. So luckily I don't use it on my personal machine just at the moment. So I won't worry about that for the time being. I'm sure they'll get it sorted out reasonably quickly.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, that all went pretty smoothly. I did a fresh installation, which went pretty well. I had all my .dot files set up, so it was just a matter of running my .dot files repo, and everything was pretty much up and running in a couple of hours without too much fuss, which was nice. The other thing I wanted to talk about briefly is this Mazel framework. Have you heard of it before?
Are you talking about the email thing?
We spoke about it on the Laravel News podcast. Well, probably a month or so ago now. Mazel is a it's based on Jigsaw and Tailwind, and it allows you to essentially build HTML email templates using the Tailwind CSS framework. And it's pretty nice. You can build your HTML templates. You can write your markdown to go, you know, as content into those templates. It uses Jigsaw to compile it, and then it will handle all of the processing of the HTML that you write and inline all the styles and do all that kind of stuff that you need to do in order for your emails to work in as many different clients as possible. You still have to write tables upon tables, which is a bit finicky, but it seems pretty nice. The only hang up I have is that I want to then take those templates and use them as notifiables inside a Laravel application.
Sure, yeah.
So I've got to like build the templates with static content. I then have to generate the HTML and then pick all that up and then copy that into my Laravel application, because we wanted to add email notifications into our service status or outage notification tool, just that we can send emails to our support staff when an outage has been scheduled or when an outage has started and finished and things like that. So I spent a bit of time on Friday going through that, and it's gone pretty nicely. As I said, the only real hang up I have is having to copy and paste all of that rendered HTML back out into another app. I don't know if there's a better solution for that, but that was kind of the solution. The other one that the author of the framework suggested is that you can put it into Mailgun as a template and then use their API.
We
won't do that in our instance. What was that, sorry?
Just to fill it in, to kind of like provide the blanks to the Mailgun API.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that works if you're doing transactional email where you just want to have like dear name and all that kind of stuff, and then you're just sending the same email. I think it works really well in that situation. We're doing like completely custom stuff, but the default stuff that comes with Laravel is nice, but it doesn't really give us the flexibility in terms of rendering and presentation that we wanted for these things, because there's quite a lot of detail that goes into them.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you need something more than like markdown, like rendered email templates, right, which are really nice and handy for when you need something pretty simple and straightforward and that looks good and it renders well. But if you need anything a little bit more custom than that, you're kind of on your own to do that, which totally makes sense. I mean, Laravel is an email framework, right? But
if you have to generate HTML email, definitely we'll link it up in the show notes, but check out Mazel, and you can use that in combination with Tailwind to build some pretty nice looking templates. It comes with a couple of examples in terms of what you can do with it and how you might lay it out, but yeah, pretty nice, pretty easy to get up and running. So I just thought I'd give that a shout out.
So then does it do all the inlining for your CSS and all that stuff? So like when you render out the HTML email template, it has already done all the inlining and all that stuff for you.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Yep, it's all handled for you.
Yeah, and so I'm reading the docs here and it says Mazel is more like a project than a package. So you simply clone the repo on your machine and then you're ready to go. So you use it kind of as like the tool that you're going to use to build your HTML emails, which you will then import into your service of choice. In this case, Laravel, right?
Yeah, so I'm doing it in Laravel, but you could put it as the author had suggested, is to throw that into Mailgun and you could use it that way. I presume you could, you know, put it into MailChimp things like that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
that's pretty awesome though.
Cosmin Popovici is his name. So he's responsible for this. But yeah, as I said, I'll link it up in the show notes. Really easy to get up and running. You just basically follow the instructions, install your Composer dependencies, and then install your NPM dependencies and just run NPM run watch. And it'll do a little browser sync thing so you can refresh as you go. And then, just dump out your HTML when it's finished. And using NPM run prod, it'll strip out all of the things that you don't need. So it does email specific post processing, it'll inline the styles, it'll clean up all of your unused CSS in style tags and inside HTML attributes. It'll, you know, do code prettify and minification, and it can uglify class names if you want. And then you can even specify whether you would, if you want to use attributes or inline CSS. But yeah, it all compiles down into HTML and makes things really, really easy. If that's what you want to do. So
this is so
definitely
meta.
Recommend checking it out if that's what you want to do.
This is so meta because Jigsaw is kind of like inspired by or built kind of using Laravel's Blade templating engine. It has like master layouts and partials and collections and all that stuff, right? And then you have this, which is built using Jigsaw powering, you know, Jigsaw powers this, and then you're using the output of that to push back into Laravel. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's just interesting that like Jigsaw is now being used as like a tool to produce other things. Jigsaw is just so freaking awesome as well. I mean, because it's producing static flat files, it totally makes sense. Like, why would you reinvent the wheel on that? Like, it already does all that for you. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Do we have anything else or is that it?
No, I think that's it.
Successful. A successful podcast. All right. We are going to try and get this guy on the next show. David Korshid.
Maybe you should send me his name so I can try.
Here, hold on. He's a pianist and a web developer.
Pianist from Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He just casually works at Microsoft. This would be a great guy to have on the podcast.
He would be. He would be excellent to have on the podcast. All right, we're doing it.
All right, yeah. Get in touch with him. See if he's interested in coming on the next show and we can talk about it.
Sounds good, man. We're going to make it happen.
All right. No worries.
Excellent. All right, man. Well, thanks everybody so much for listening to another episode of the North Meets South Web podcast. If you'd like show notes for this episode, you can find them at northmeetsouth.audio/48. Is it 48?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there we go. Mm-hmm. If you like the show, please feel free to rate us up in your podcatcher of choice. 5 stars would be appreciated. If you have questions, hit us up on Twitter at Jacob Bennett, at Michael Dorinda. We always love hearing from everybody. And hopefully next time we'll be talking to Mr. David Kay
about
state machines. That'd be awesome. All right, everyone. We will catch you next time. See you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Hey, and thanks everyone for coming back to us. Even though we've been on hiatus for such a long time, we had a pretty good listenership last episode. So we thank you to everyone who either returned to the show or listened to us for the first time. So I know there was someone out there, they tweeted to us to say that they had gone through a backlog of not only our podcast, but a couple of other podcasts, which was a tremendous feat. And we appreciate your effort for sure.
All right, everybody. Sounds good. See you in a couple of weeks. Thanks again. Bye.
See you. Bye.